Dieter and Hutch, we didn't get cut. This is sicko-funded nonsense. Happy to be here tonight to talk about the 49ers 53 or whatever the hell this is supposed to be. Jake, what a day. What a time to be alive, my friend.
It is a time to be alive. It's certainly a time. And
and we are, in fact, alive.
Unlike, we are alive in unlike, a place at well, a time.
Is Thomas Morstead, the 49ers' respectable punter, is he still alive? He seems to be tweeting signs of life. By the way, yeah, here's how I know Thomas Morstead's old. Active Twitter user.
Awesome.
Nothing says elder millennial like still in on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm still using it, and that was a mistake.
That's because all sports writers are 45-year-old men. Doesn't right, matter how young or old you are, male or female, anything in between. We're all 45-year-old men. I'm starting to get into Springsteen. It was inevitable.
Ooh, the boss. as a New Jerseyan, there's some people who that's a religion for them. It's just Bruce Springsteen.
For some people, 49ers are a religion. And right now, I think you should be having a crisis of faith, Jake.
You do. You do.
What did you make of today, my friend?
Yes. Yeah, so let me start with, you know, there's some things that didn't shock me that I thought were silly. And there were some things that, you know, wide receiver, when I broke it down on the Hutch Report, for those of you who went over and looked. I said, it's, you know, it's the most effed up position on this roster, clearly, by far. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it is. And so kind of anything they did there wouldn't have shocked me. I had them cutting Cowan, which was perhaps a too logical a view, because he's an unproven player who, you know, hasn't done anything, but they're excited about his offseason progression.
He has 4 NFL catches, Jake.
Right. 4. Which is 3 more than Danny Gray.
That's
so
accurate.
That's, you know, that's something. That's something. And maybe, you know, maybe he turns into something, but clearly he wasn't going to be available. And so I think we should start there, which their approach was. It's this confounding thing of they didn't, if you designate a guy in one of these 2 return spots, it's the loophole, right? But you get 8 total spots.
Right.
You get 8 total spots of players who can return. And once you designate two of them.
This is from IR. So you can place players who haven't been on IR, who haven't been on PUP. At the end of camp, you have the ability to place 2 players on injured reserve designated to return.
Correct. But that immediately counts for 2 of those 8 spots, which if you do it during the regular season, is not the case. You can put a guy on IR and then decide later if you want to bring him back and see if you use all those spots. So I get it from a flexibility standpoint.
And this is regarding Cowing and why they kept him in your thoughts.
Correct. Correct. Which Nick Wagoner pointed out, and I sort of criticized the 49ers for that and saw Nick's tweet. And I'm like, all right, I understand the context. And still, I don't really know if I disagree with my initial point, right? Like the point being that, like, are you really going to lose a guy that, like Valdez or something, where you have a bunch, or Robert Beal? Like, who's picking up Robert Beal? You couldn't have gotten him to the practice squad, and instead you're doing this thing with Cowan. So it's like,
well, let's take it back about 5 steps here, because the Cowan thing absolutely needs some scrutiny. At the same time, it's a Jacob Cowan thing. I think it's indicative of the larger issues at hand, but it is still Jacob Cowan. Like, the first moves that they made today were to cut their wide receiver 2. Like, I know that Russell Gage shouldn't be their wide receiver 2.
Right.
But they cut him, ostensibly to get him on the practice squad so they can call him up. And I suppose that if you try to give them the benefit of the doubt, it is because, hey, in a couple weeks, we're going to have too many wide receivers. So let's just do this procedural thing today with Russell Gage and Robbie Chosen so that we don't have issues down the line of having, if they have 2 good games or something, we don't have to then cut them and then get them on the practice squad in week 3 when everyone's all banged up.
Right.
That's the benefit of the doubt. The fact of the matter is they have 2 healthy wide receivers on their roster right now. Like, that's not enough. I know that Kyle Shanahan only wants to use 2 wide receivers most of the time. But Bricky Pearsall and Sky Moore ain't going to get it done for you. And I know things are going to change, but that was bizarre. They don't currently have a punter because they needed to use Thomas Morstead for procedural purposes.
And so none of this really matters, right? They're going to get these guys back and bump them up from the practice squad. But it is like indicative of the shambolic nature of their roster after the top part, right?
Totally. Like, they have no idea what they're doing with the bottom part of their roster. They're still looking for answers.
I think they do, but I don't think it's like a solution to the problem. I think it's that.
I think they know that too.
We're going to like bring back probably Russell Gage and Robbie Chose on the practice squad, and we'll bump them up for the first 3 weeks, right? And that's sort of our plan. But then, you know, like, is that an answer where you're just going to have Ricky Pearsall and you don't know if you're going to have Juwan Jennings? It'll be interesting because Jennings, especially Tim Kawakami, has been all over it. Like, they're going to have to make a decision there, whether they put him on a list or not. And so they kept him, right?
Just they put him on the 53, no designation, nothing. He's just on the roster.
But if something doesn't change there in the next week, it does feel like they're going to say, all right, Jennings, we're going to put you either on the restricted list or if you're going to claim it's an injury, IR, right?
Right. What stands out to me is that they have two decisions with wide, and this is just with wide receivers. We can go into the rest of it, and we will. But with just wide receiver, they had to make two decisions that are not necessarily straightforward, though I would argue one of them is far more straightforward than the other. With Jennings, they have to figure out, okay, what are we doing here? Are we going to put him on IR and sort of call his bluff about this calf injury, which is real but probably is being exaggerated to make a point for contract negotiations? Are we going to call his bluff, put him on IR, totally screw him on all his incentives, right? And just say, right. Because I think it's like 60% of the snaps.
Yeah, it's like $3 million in the balance or 3.2 or something, where it's like if he doesn't play, and they're not crazy incentives, but he needs to play basically from the start of the season to hit them.
Correct. Especially knowing that he's not the clear-cut wide receiver one on this team with Pearsall's emergence and the fact that down the line, more wide receivers who will take snaps are going to come in and he'll probably get relegated back to the role he should be playing, which is third down slot receiver.
It's crazy that he has more leverage than he's ever had. And the 49ers are like, no. And rightfully so. They're like, I don't care.
What you going to do about it?
I'm very, 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 very intrigued to see what happens on waivers tomorrow because I think it's going to get weird.
Oh, it's definitely going to get weird.
There's a ton of viable, and by viable, I mean bad, but, you know, theoretical NFL receivers and random tackles that I think you could see Pleasants get cut. You could see a lot of these guys who made the initial roster get changed, and I think offensive line is probably what we'll talk about next.
And defensive line is a mess. But then the other decision that they decided not. So they didn't make that decision with Jennings today. Okay. Correct. They decided, actually, we're going to table that. We're just going to wait another couple days.
I honestly think is the right way to handle that situation.
Okay, fair enough. Then we come to the Cowing situation. Why do you need to wait and see on Jacob Cowing? Well, what are we doing that, what has Jacob Cowing shown you in his like five NFL practices and four NFL catches that makes you say, hey, let's go through a lot of bureaucratic bullshit to make sure that we could possibly keep him? Like the suggestion that I've heard is, hey, they're hamstring injuries. You just never know. And they just want a little bit longer to evaluate the hamstring injury to see if he even could come back. They're evaluating the hamstring injury, but not the player. Like, again, I know that they're in dire straits, but Jacob Cowing's not coming back for months, right? This hamstring that he re-aggravated is apparently
at a point in the season where they shouldn't really need him. If you have a season where you've got, and granted, you don't know what the injury situation is going to be. You want flexibility, but you should have Pearsall, Jennings, Robinson, and Watkins, which is five wide receivers, and that's not talking about Ayuk, who at this point is probably on the same timeline as Cowing or not that far off.
Right. And so, and by the way, let's also just pull it back for just a second on this. Like, Jacob Cowing was around. He got injured because that's what Jacob Cowing does. And I feel bad for the guy, but like it is the nature of the beast. It's a fact. The best ability is availability and he doesn't have it. And the 49ers were eager and willing to play gentlemen they signed off the street over him. So when they, on the couple of practices he was around, or I guess the half practice he was around.
Well, how much of that is just they rotate wide receivers though? Like,
again, it's like, dude, the fact of the matter is that Jacob Cowing was entitled to nothing upon return, but now is entitled to something while he's out? I don't understand it. So now let's talk about offensive line and defensive line. So they made a bunch of procedural moves on wide receiver, right? We're going to make this really difficult, a lot of red tape.
And real quick, like I understand, again, here's the thing. So like real quick, briefly, Grant Cohn and David Lombardi have chosen to use me as a place to do a proxy
what
war.
What did you do?
Basically, I said the 49ers always make like a weird move on roster cutdown day, which is a fact. Every year there's something where you're like, did they need to do that? And there's always some like weird procedural answer.
You mean like their punter today?
Right. Where you get the answer and you go, okay, I understand the answer. And also I think it's a little bit of bullshit. I think it's a little bit of, it's a wazzy, it's a woozy, it's a little bit floozy, you know?
It's always too cute by half. And you end up with a situation where you lose a player who maybe wouldn't have been anything big, but you just lose a player that you were.
You lose a player who's healthy and functional on a roster that is usually not healthy. And like you want good players that are healthy. And you're like, Sebastian Valdez, we have a million defensive tackles who are maybe okay. And this guy is like promising and young, and you hyped him up all season very publicly.
Yeah.
I just thought cut Jacob Cowan. Just cut Jacob Cowan or decide that he's that good that you're going to, I don't know. I get the flexibility. I get what they're doing. And also, I think you're sort of wasting a spot. And there were other spots where I think they could have, you know, stolen an extra spot. But
isn't this so telling that they're willing to make their lives harder to keep Jacob Cowan? Like, doesn't that tell you how bad the bottom of this roster is?
Yeah, it does. And just briefly to recap this stupid situation. Grant retweeted me, and of course I was like, why is David Lombardi retweeting me and explaining something? Because there's a whole thing. And
I'll be clear about this. I like both Grant and David personally. The characters that they play online,
right?
I don't participate, and
David's explanation is logical, and of course with the tone that the 49ers can do no wrong, right? And that's, again, I'm not telling anyone how to do their job. We know the dynamics. I'm just saying, leave me out of this weird thing.
They've both decided to play to markets that will make them money, and we, on the other hand, have decided to play to a market of just deranged people who apparently enjoy pessimism. No, listen, this is our authentic selves. People keep telling us to change, and we're like, we wouldn't even know how. So again, it's just like, you're going trouble.
Just leave me out of it.
Okay. You're a little messed up about it. I can tell. It's no fun being in the crosshairs. This takes world ain't for everybody, baby. So especially on Twitter is so visceral. It's like everything is the school cafeteria, and now suddenly you're being made fun of, and you're like in the middle of a big fight that everyone's watching.
Procedural decisions.
Yeah. And it's like, dude, what are you doing? Like, again, when we talk about a weird move, okay, is it a little weird to get rid of Russell Gage, who you're going to need in week one? Yes, but I can see it.
Not getting rid of him.
Right.
They're just,
But for now they have. Like, I know that he's at the Marriott, but he is not on their 53-man roster. That with Robbie Chosen, which makes that's a lot easier to swallow, right? Because it's like, I don't know, Robbie Chosen. And then they're like, no, we need to cut our punter, our only punter. I don't know. Is this some sort of a message to Jake Moody? Like, we could do this to you too if you keep messing up. Like, we killed your friend. Now you're next. Just so that, because again,
I think Morstead did it last year too. He's like, listen,
I'm sure he gets a little extra something, and it's good for Thomas Morstead. It's just weird, and it's kind of unnecessary.
He's also, as I mentioned, is a VP of the NFLPA, so kind of an. I'm just saying, it's like interesting to sort of volunteer for that.
Sacrificing, shouldn't that kind of be illegal? I was thinking about this, and it's like, be illegal to store a player at the Marriott?
It's a little problematic, but. There's too many moving parts. I want to get to offensive line next, and then
let's get to offensive line. And let's just let everyone know what we're looking at here. So this is the wonderful little chart that Jake made.
Yep.
So offensive line,
which by the way, speaking of other, God, I just love every aggregator account just taking it, but then adding me, and then getting exponentially more engagement than my account, but just using it because they didn't want to take the 2 seconds to actually write it all out.
Put it in a sweet ass. Look at that.
Fun. Moving on.
Look at those lines.
Didn't seem to get it wrong, which is good.
I mean, did you spell Aquanu right? We're gonna find out. I couldn't tell you.
Yeah. I think I haven't memorized.
So again, I don't disagree with anything that they did on offensive line, but I do find it, well, actually, that's not true, but I do find it kind of bizarre. It's like bizarre. Like, okay, we're going to cut Sakel, who we've shown nothing but allegiance to, but Matt Hennessy, you get to stick around, even though you've been dog crap. We're going to keep Drew Moss. I think we're both in agreement. Like, hey, you probably felt like you couldn't get him through. Better safe than sorry. But, like, you couldn't get Russell Gage and Robbie Chosen, players that you need desperately. You're going to risk, and I know it's not much of a risk, if any risk, but you're going to risk them. But heaven forbid you let Austin Pleasance, who was also dog crap, and Matt Hennessy hit the open market so that they can be healthy scratches on game day.
Yeah, so where I'm at is, again, I said this is last, like, yesterday. Like I said, I think they're going to keep Pleasance because they simply don't have another player they even theoretically trust at right tackle. Now, are there a million awful right tackles in similar veins
that
they could just scoop up off the waiver wire? Absolutely.
Too many to count.
But I think Pleasance has been in the system, so they say, all right, until we know we have another option, we're going to keep him. I understand it. Moss, I initially had him on my roster when we talked about it, and then I changed it when I did my article, which was stupid. But, like, he, I think the goal is to train him at center, and eventually you don't need Hennessy. But Hennessy, you need a center because you're cutting Sakel. You're basically saying Sakel was so bad that he's not better than Colby or Moss or Hennessy by any significant margin, that the value of him playing center and guard is negated. But it means that instead of one guy, you need to make sure you have two, because you can't trust Moss to play center. So you need Hennessy, who's a veteran there. You don't really want Colby playing right guard. You want to keep him at left. They're like, they went from like,
they've already switched Colby to right guard. In fact, he's better at right guard.
I know. But initially they wanted to keep him at left, but like,
he's not good at either.
Their whole thing initially was that we want players to be multifaceted and be able to play multiple positions. And then they went, you're just going to play one position.
I mean, they literally created a full, it's like a hockey line. They created a whole second string.
Yeah.
Just left to right. Here it is. Everybody fall in line. I mean, honestly, that's the one knock I have on your chart here, that you didn't literally make it center one, center two.
I know. I know. I did botch that. But I think it comes from, listen, are any of these guys in their own right, these backups, are they actually good? No. But are they okay at one position? Maybe. And maybe if we just keep them at this one position, they can be serviceable and not have to worry about all these other things.
Yeah.
And I kind of get that thesis, even though it means we have 10 roster spots for offensive linemen.
I totally get that. And again, when it's kind of the situation of, man, I mean, it is the situation of we don't think any of these guys are good, so we're too afraid to cut any of them. Because what if one of them's good? Like, that's
right. And listen, like,
they're hoarding. This is hoarding.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you probably could have cut Pleasance. But like, if you're going to cut Sakel, you need to keep Hennessy. So it's like, and then you're going to need a backup right tackle anyway. So why not just hold the spot for Pleasance? And then you didn't want to lose Moss because you actually see some upside there.
I get the Moss thing. I understand trying to find a way to keep Moss on the 53. I'm not sure it was necessary, but again, if you have even an inkling that you could lose them, you don't lose them.
Right? Yeah.
Precious commodity as opposed to a veteran wide receiver who you picked up off the street.
Yeah.
I just don't get the Hennessy and Pleasance thing. And if those guys here's the thing. I don't trust that they're not going to keep them. I don't trust that they're not going to make it all the way home, because they really value the guys that have been around. They have a loyalty to the guys who have been around. Sakel was on this team for how many years?
Yeah, I was kind of surprised that they just chose now to get rid of him when he's been around, and I thought has had, you know, he proved a little bit last year, I thought, and then now they move on. I think genuinely most of the moves are like whatever, right? Like, because there's always going to be shuffling around, and you need to do some special teams work. I was kind of proud of them for just keeping five linebackers and not adding like a Curtis Robinson. And they have a habit of doing that. Right. The one roster move, I will just say, like, the one player I think you definitely should have cut is Robert Beal. I understand the special teams requirements and that's probably why you keep him. Right. But if you're, And it would be one thing if they kept him and they kept Yetur Gross-Matos on injured reserve, or I mean on PUP. But they activated Gross-Matos.
He passed his physical.
So now you have six defensive ends and five defensive tackles. I just don't think you needed to keep Beal. I think you could have cut Beal and you could have kept Valdez instead. That's like the one clear decision that I disagree with. Again, none of these things are going to be earth shattering. And like this is roughly the roster we expect. But like if we're going to get into it, we're going to get into it.
Yeah, the Beal thing is kind of bizarre because he just hasn't shown anything. It's not as if we haven't been looking either. There's been no flash, right? There hasn't been any pop. And then you watch, and I mean, I guess it hasn't been awful, but there's
no, nothing. It's been better. It's just, I don't think you need to roster him.
Yeah, I don't know who's picking up Robert Beal off the scrap heap today.
Right, when you've got five defensive ends already, I guess you're worried about health with Michael and Gross-Matos, but like, I think... Given that you don't know what you're getting from Alfred Collins and Kalia Davis has never proven to be healthy, I think I would have rather had Valdez.
And they used an IR designation on Givens, as you predicted.
Yep.
Pretty easy to see, to be fair.
Which, because his contract's fully guaranteed, so that's like a sunk cost and a player who's actually played. So
but the irony of keeping Beal and letting Gibson go hit the market is kind of bizarre to me. Like, again, who's asking for Beal? Whereas I think there's going to be some teams that call up Gibson now.
And I thought what you do is you'd cut Beal and you try and bring him up on the practice squad. And then Gibson, like, is a guy that you can activate too off the practice squad, who like actually did have some pressures, again, third string offenses, but like was looking Beal's pretty good at defensive end. I understand the special teams, but like, I don't know. You've got a decent amount of players that can play. Like, I don't know that you needed to keep the spot. Maybe I'm totally wrong on that, but because I guess they're thin at DB too. So
it's just incredible to me because it does seem as if there's so many. Like, how many of the guys on this roster are we saying like, oh, just put them on practice squad and then call them up? You only get a couple of call ups a game. It seems like the practice squad is their 53 man roster.
Yeah, and I understand some people are a little bit exasperated with the fact that there's been a negative tone. Well, first of all, that's just our sort of natural state.
You know what?
But two.
Yeah.
We're talking about a team that is very top heavy, and have seen preseason. So we're coming off of just watching backups and third string players on a roster that's top heavy. And once there's an actual season and we get to see a first team offense and first team defense, we can address whether this team is for real or not. But when we're assessing the guys we see, we're all backups and there's not a lot delineating them. Right. It's hard to like pretend to be incredibly enthused about a Robert Beal Jr. We're realists, I think. And maybe that's too pessimistic for some folks,
no,
but like,
whatever.
They can
bellyache about pessimism. The fact of the matter is that this team's roster is worse than it was last year. Doesn't mean they still don't have the same high end guys. They do.
I mean, you can make an argument that they have more depth at defensive line. It's just a question of like, we don't know a lot of these guys. We don't know what a lot of these guys are going to provide. And later in the year, I think it could prove to be a better roster.
Well,
but it's just a lot of unproven assets.
But you're talking about the kids. And with the kids, that's a whole other paradigm, right? You evaluate the kids differently. And some kids are going to flame out. Isaac Arendo, Jacob Cowan, Robert Beal from 3 years ago. Some kids are going to be absolutely awesome.
Yep.
We're not evaluating the rookies today. Other than Junior Bergen, who got cut, like, we're not evaluating those guys. The problem is so much of this team is those guys who are complete wild cards, some which are great, like Marquise Siegel. We feel really good about that. We feel positive about Upton Stout, though I don't know if he's going to be playing anytime soon.
Yep.
You know, we feel great about Renardo Green as a second year player. You know, I think Jordan James has a shot to give you some snaps. Obviously, Dominic Cooney's
Their defense, I would be shocked if it's worse. I mean, I think they have the pieces. But again, unproven assets, man.
Let me ask you this fundamentally. What was their biggest issue other than injuries on this team last year?
It was defensive tackle.
And let's, I mean, even take it, take five steps back on that. Their biggest issue was stopping the run, no?
Yeah, I mean, I think some people will disagree because the numbers weren't that crazy bad. But in terms of like what lost them games, what really destroyed them fundamentally, it was that they didn't have a linebacker next to Fred Warner who could compensate for the fact that the defensive tackles were getting cleared out really easily.
Totally. It was the saloon font saloon doors between Evan Anderson and Jordan Elliott. Are they, right now, as we head into week one, a division game, can you say earnestly that this team got better at playing the run over the past 9 months?
I would say yes.
How so?
One, they've added Robert Saleh.
What's that do? I mean, obviously, it's a better defensive coordinator.
There's just
but like,
a level of capability
do?
And understanding how to attack a problem. Identifying a problem. So he's going to identify that. Like he understands.
He can count to 11. Yeah.
Right. I know he doesn't do a lot, but he's adding more guys around the line of scrimmage. He's giving different looks to at least make it easier on the defense.
Yeah.
Number two, I'm not even going to include Alfred Collins, who's theoretically a good run defender, but I think his head is spinning because they're trying to change what he is as a player.
Understandably,
I think CJ West plugs gaps well. I think he is an immediate upgrade, and I think Mykael Williams, the physicality he brings, if he's healthy, mm-hmm. at defensive end, you have two players in him and Bosa who can stop the run. And then you have CJ West, who is a gap plugger, and then whatever else is next to them, I think immediately that is a better group. Whatever D Winters is, he's a year older at least, and he's a little bit, it seems, sturdier. We'll find out over the course of the year, but I would say pretty confidently I feel that this team's going to be better against the run.
Okay. Do you think it will be good against the run?
I think it depends on like what Alfred Collins
but
becomes.
Like Jake, like, do you, I mean, I don't disagree with what you're saying. I think it's sound and logical, but you just listed off the reasons why they could be better is Alfred Collins is doing the escalator temporarily stairs thing where it's like, oh, he'll never be the player or he's not going to be the player we want him to be. But at least in the meantime, he can stop the run. No real evidence of that, by the way. You're saying CJ West can plug it. And I agree with you. I think CJ West is awesome. He's also a fourth round draft pick who's a rookie. And Mykael Williams is legitimately, you and I both believe, an immediate day one guy who can set the edge and stop the run at end and then slide inside on pass rushing downs and be an absolute beast to tackle. But he doesn't play football right now.
Correct.
He just
Correct.
Got back.
Correct.
So that's the difference between last year and this year is, oh, there are bodies, theoretical bodies that could do this job. Maybe.
Right. But I mean, like Evan Anderson showed a little bit. He's a year older. He's around, right? I will give him the benefit of the doubt.
I mean, he is round.
Yeah. And then there's Kalia Davis, who, again, until he proves that he can stay healthy or do anything, I will expect nothing from him. I just think I have a hard time believing that they can be worse with younger personnel who have specialized in run defense and with a better defensive coordinator. I just have a hard time believing they're going to get worse.
There's not that much worse to go. I know that people say, oh, statistically in the yards per game and stuff, but when you look at success rate and explosive play rate against, they were like 29th in the NFL. They got absolutely cooked. And so on those important metrics, and so that's where I'm at. Like, okay, year over year, what have they improved upon? Have they improved on depth? Only if you're arguing they have more people who could possibly do the job.
I would say they are better at depth on defensive line. They are roughly the same at linebacker, and they are worse at defensive back.
That's kind of wild that they're. I mean, the fall off is significant.
Safety, yeah. They might have a little bit more depth in terms of just like Richie Grant and Jason Pinnock both being just human players.
They're fine. They'll know the plays.
Cornerback, it's worse without question.
The drop off at cornerback is massive from. What we they like might is have to, maybe a, yeah. a 1-2 with Renardo Green and LaMore, which is outstanding.
When we look at guys to pick up, I think the priority might have to be corner and wide receiver.
I mean, but this is what we're talking
about. But I kind of don't think they're going to do anything at wide receiver if Jennings is available.
We don't know on the Jennings thing. They've punted
they
that.
They don't know.
Yeah, and they're refusing to press it forward in any way that they could. So that is what it is. They are, as it stands, going as it stands. They can't go in as it stands. They don't have a punter, and they don't have enough wide receivers as it stands. So obviously things are going to change, but I don't know if they're going to appreciably change for the better. They have been making calls on wide receiver, offensive line, specifically tackle.
What if
you want to just pull that up?
I just had an idea.
Yeah.
What if instead of even bringing Morstead back, they not only keep Moody, but they also have him do punts?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm all for corporal punishment. it's like, hey, maybe that's the reason your leg isn't stretching enough. That's what they do in college sometimes.
Yeah.
We're going to go to the comment section here. And I'm not saying that is wrong, but we'll get to the super chats in a second. Damien, CB might be better if Stout is a stud. Like
at the top, it's better.
Sure. I mean, legitimately, Lenore and Green have a chance to be the best 1-2 in the NFC. I mean, I don't think it's getting to Houston's level, but like they have a chance to be really awesome. Hope none of them get injured. I mean, because they kept Daryl Luter, even though Daryl Luter just spent the last month saying, like, please cut me. I don't want to be here anymore.
You know, it's like there's times where you see a flash and then the next play is really, really objectively awful. And you're like getting Akello Witherspoon, you know, flashbacks where it's just like good, terrible. And you're just like, there's no in between.
By the way, Akello Witherspoon available.
But I get it. They think, listen, he's been around forever. He's athletic. He's long. He's the only actual outside corner we have on the roster. He can play special teams for us. We keep him around.
And then there's, you know, they have Sarah Neal as a corner because they just had to find some place to put him on the roster, and they didn't want to, they thought it would look better there.
I'm not honestly convinced that Neal, Pinnock, and Grant are different players. In my head, they all occupy the same space.
I'm not sure about that, but I think Pinnock is fine. I think he's absolutely fine. I think Grant has some upside in the sense of
laughing at you.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. There was a Jason Verrett. Forgot about Jason Verrett.
Well, I can tell you that that Bob Sala hasn't. We're being nitpicky here about the overarching issue, which is that I don't like this team's depth at all. And so to go back to what the initial prompt of this was, like, people are saying we're being pessimistic. Well, today is a day where you talk about the depth of your football team, which is vitally important to success in the NFL. If any team should know that, it's the San Francisco 49ers.
Here's one for you. Where do you feel optimistic and good about this roster? I'd say the backfield looks good.
I think that in a month, they have a chance to be a really prolific offense, particularly both ways, like really difficult to game plan against. I feel great about Purdy. I think that we haven't worried at all about Brock Purdy.
Isn't that crazy?
And he got paid. Like, now there's no referendum to be had anymore.
No, but you would think there would be more talking about him because he got paid, and it's just been radio silence because there's been everything else. And it's like the point is that, clearly he's actually monumentally important to this roster.
Which makes sense. You're paying him like that. But Robinson is an upgrade over Garendo, not in theory, but in practice. So that's solid.
Yeah. And real quick, I think what people are forgetting and that the 49ers basically hinted at is like this is like a plan for 2026 that they don't want to explicitly state that. And they've sort of been, well, we have a lot of key pieces, so we can't be completely out on the season.
Right.
But in our minds, we would be kind of surprised if this is the year. And we're hoping those veterans that we keep around can find a way to be 2/3 or 3/4 of themselves in a year's time.
I think that's right. But we come back to this again. Last year, they were stars and scrubs, and it bit them in the ass hard, hard.
And they certainly signed players.
Last year?
Yep.
Yeah. Last year, they had more theoretical depth. It didn't manifest, but they had more theoretical depth. This year, they don't have theoretical depth. It might manifest. Maybe trying was the problem all along.
Yeah, but I just think it's going to be a season of a lot of like, oh my God, is it going to click? Is it going to click? Are they about to click? No, not quite. Is it clicking? Maybe. And then there's going to be injuries because there's so many young guys and so many new pieces. There's just going to be, it's going to be a lot of peaks and valleys. And I don't know that it's ever going to get a clear delineation one way or the other, unless they get healthy and it clicks at the right time.
They're too good to be terrible.
Yep.
And too shallow to be great.
I think that's a great way to describe it.
And that's a very frustrating purgatory to be living in, because you're going to be playing very close games all season long. Thank God you have a kicker you trust. Oh, wait. And then if one thing goes wrong, it just has the ability to snowball in a way, because you just don't have, you don't have that emergency fund, right? A big bill comes out of the blue. You get in a car wreck. You have to go to the hospital. Anything like, you don't have the funds to be able to cover that for a month, a season. You're screwed. And that's what happened last year. And for all of the supposed lessons that they learned by getting their guys signed early, which, by the way, how'd that work out when we got to Jennings? But yeah, getting their guys signed early and cutting money.
Yeah. They
all this stuff. And then here we go. We're coming in and the depth isn't there because they didn't spend money on moderately priced, even low value free agents. They just didn't bring any in. The only guys that they signed were Gifford and Neal. And like, who am I missing? Who did they sign in free agency? Farrell. They had to go get that second tight end.
And again, a lot of that's just cash spending. It's not that the cap was an issue, because all those guys are so cheap that if you know the 53-man or the 51 rule, basically anyone that's below like the 51, which is like everyone on a minimum contract or around there, you're not actually eating up much cap space. So it wouldn't have cost them much in terms of the actual cap space. It's cash spending,
cash,
where they have a lot of dead money that they paid out. And they didn't want to pay more, which is not something that they've stated, not something that people that talk about glowingly about the team and praise everything they do want to mention. But there is a cash element that's real to this. And they spent a lot last year.
Yep.
And they wanted to spend less this year, though they're still spending plenty. It's just the cap doesn't match up. And they are obsessed with moving the cap space from this season over to next, because that's how they've chosen to carry space and create space going forward, where a lot of these deals get crazy numbers. Point is, they did a lot of things that were smart from a business standpoint to set themselves up for long-term success. They also refused to make very cheap moves to acquire some pieces that would have made it a lot easier right about now.
I mean, think about what a $3 million Puna Ford would look like on this team. Now you're not worrying about both Collins and West and Kalia Davis and Evan Anderson and Jordan Elliott. You're just like, well, Puna Ford's your one technique, and you could do better, you could do worse. And it's the same. This is what the crazy thing is. I know that the Niners know that they messed up because they traded for Brian Robinson.
Yeah.
And he's the exact kind of player I'm talking about, the exact kind of player that back in March and April you can get on the cheap, because they just got him again on the cheap thanks to the Washington Commanders doing God knows what. And it's like, could you do better? Absolutely. Could you do worse? Hell yeah, brother. Easily. They just didn't, they did not insulate themselves appropriately in very many places. And we all go back to the quote that John Lynch gave Cam Inman. There's a little something called the draft. I'm paraphrasing, but like, what was the plan to fill out the roster? I mean, Kyle was like up at night wondering how the hell they were going to put a football team together.
Kyle quite literally said he was like, until we had the draft, I was terrified. I was like horrified. Which is fair. And again, like, they had to get younger. They had to make some of these moves. It's just, I know, by the way, Scott, like, listen, I don't know why you're so upset.
No, if it's
you
fine. Don't like Scott, us, don't Scott listen. Will go away.
But we just said they spent a shit ton of money last year.
But there's on one like, guy. Well, right. on their 6-7 big guys. By the way, there was no limit to the amount of cash
they
can
spent.
The Eagles spend
cash
money
we
all the time.
We said that already. Anyway, I don't know why.
No, you know, Scotty can go away. And so it is. Oh, they spent so much cash. Well, they have spent cash year after year after year. Now, ownership made it clear we're not chasing bad money with good money anymore. We're going to take our money. We're going to spend it on Brock. We're going to spend it on our high-level guys. The idea that there's no in-between is laughable because, again, they just spent a little bit of money, just a little bit, on a Brian Robinson. They just spent a little bit of money, very little, on a Sky Moore. They had to give up draft picks to get him. Those are guys that are available in the way that a Jason Pinnock and a Richie Grant are. More positions could have used guys like that.
They listen, it's not that they're in this horrific situation. This could work out and they could have like a great season where the rookies click. And they, again, there's like a massive range of possibilities for this team. I think we've been on that from the start.
They're volatile for sure.
Extremely, extremely high at the top. And if the rookies hit, the ceiling's immense, right? But because you didn't plug a lot of these gaps with some very cheap veterans who are at least capable, who have been in the NFL and understand mm-hmm. what an NFL season is and what the grind is, you're setting yourself up for counting on inexperienced players to fill gaps and provide crucial minutes and crucial snaps where there's going to be some growing pains. That's just how being a rookie tends to work for 80% of the guys, if not more. So if it looks ugly or if it looks inconsistent, that's how they've set up the roster.
Right. And it did not solve their big issue last year, which was this team didn't have enough depth, and it's still a mile wide and an inch deep. And when you're out here doing all this extra work for what, I mean, so that you can punt a decision on Jacob Cowing for another couple of days so that you don't have to make a call on Juwan Jennings, so you don't have to cut an offensive lineman because they're all bad and you're hoping that, you know, maybe one of them shows their face in the final week before the season starts. Like, they know. And this is why they were out here looking to trade, like, a bunch. And they're still out here looking to sign a bunch. There's the chance, and we'll see if they can do it, because now they're competing with everybody. As if they weren't ever. But, like, now there's a lot of everybody's looking.
They've got the benefit of a good waiver position, at least, at 11.
At 11.
Which is, they haven't had in years, which is nice.
Valid. They earned it because they didn't have any depth last year.
And it does feel a little bit like when you sort of whiff in your draft and fantasy and you're like, oh, shoot. All right. Let me panic.
You're speaking from experience.
I'm going to drop my entire budget in the first 2 weeks and I'm going to get guys that plug gaps. And then you're like, all right, well, this guy's actually helping me. But now I have no budget left. And if these guys don't plug these gaps, I'm screwed.
I do love the Niners have been pushing, and I say this, I mean, they overtly have been pushing to anyone who wants to listen that they are on the Rams model. Okay. We're going to do it the way the Rams did it. Fair enough. Taking a look at the Rams lately. You seen what the Rams defense looks like, particularly the back end? Like, you better hope Matt Stafford's Airstream keeps him alive, because they have to put 40 points up per game with that secondary. I know that we like a lot of the defensive players, and I know that in general they don't care about linebackers. I mean, their secondary with Kitchens and Curl, and like, it is a massive question mark. And I think what they've done the last two seasons, and it's worked out for them, let's be fair, it's worked out for them because they have an incredible coach. I think the Niners do too. But what they've done is they have started and it's been meh. And then about halfway through the season, their young guys, particularly on defense, ramp it up. And then they sneak in. And then what happens, happens. And last year, they gave the Eagles as good of a shot as anybody.
Yeah.
I don't like that model. That model is so narrow in its possibilities to be successful when you consider all that can go wrong. And this idea that things are going to go right, like, the season has already started in a way, and all that's happened is everything has gone wrong already. Like, we're talking about a team that has Russell Gage, who's sitting at the Marriott as their number two receiver in week one, barring pretty drastic changes.
The other tough part, I think, that people keep forgetting, that like, it can work out the second half. That's true. But then you're like betting on being a wild card team, right?
Yes.
Which it can work out, but that's not really a serious way to compete, which I don't think this is a team that's that serious about competing this year, unless it all clicks again. That's a possibility.
Totally.
But like, you've got a ton of division games in the first half of the season, the first six games, right? Three in the first five, right? So if you're not ready, that's a problem. That's a real problem.
The NFC West could be out of the picture for this team by October 2nd.
Right. I think all five out of six division games played by start of October. Is that correct?
The penultimate division game is Arizona in week 11. They play Seattle in week 18. So just the division games, just week one, Seattle, week three at home against the Cardinals, week five, Thursday night football at the Rams, week 10 at home, that's November 9th against the Rams, week 11 on the road. Is it really the road, though? Against the Cardinals, November 16th, and then the Seattle Seahawks in week 18 on a to-be-determined date at a to-be-determined time on a to-be-determined channel, according to the official schedule, which my my wife is like, what the hell's going on there? To-be-determined across the board. It's like, yeah, well, that's how week 18s work. And the schedule being this thing that's been held up, exalted, frankly, as this gift, and it frankly is, sure, like I agree, like the Saints should absolutely get their ass kicked. If the 49ers don't kick the Saints' ass, like that's a real problem, because Spencer Rattler's bad. But
I think the point is what games
are layups on this thing? The Saints, I don't think you can say that the Giants are a layup. I don't think you can say the Falcons are a layup. I don't think that you can say the Texans are a layup.
We'll find out.
That's fair. I'm thinking too far out. This team still has to figure out how to get all these guys onto the practice squad. But
yeah, we don't know what this team's going to look like. I just want to see some actual football at this point. I am pretty like this theoretical nature of this sort of makes it where you can make any argument for this team in either direction, and it's all valid, which is fair, and that's just where we are right now with the injury situation and the youth, and all that. But
what I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around here, Jake, is a lot of folks have, and these are people who previously I would have considered respectable. A lot of folks have made the argument like, well, Vegas doesn't seem concerned about them at all. And I'm not talking about the Raiders. I'm talking about these vague algorithms that we call sports books. Like, oh, they don't seem to care. They have the second best odds or the first best odds to win the NFC. They have a 10.5 win total in Vegas. And it's like, Jake, can you see this team winning 11 games with the personnel that they currently hold?
I can't. Yeah. No, I absolutely can. But I do think a lot has to go right in terms of health for that to actually happen. And I think we're Vegas.
So no, you can't see it. Talk me into 11 wins here, because this feels like 9 or 10, and those both hit the under, baby.
Yeah. So 11 wins is pretty simple. Easiest schedule. Brock Purdy's on fire. McCaffrey's healthy. Mm-hmm. Robinson stays him a little bit. Just joking. The idea that they're actually not going to just run McCaffrey into the ground.
Oh, no. Brian Robinson will see no playing time until Christian McCaffrey is dead and buried.
Kittle will continue to look like the best tight end in football. Juwan Jennings will come to some agreement and eventually will move back to the slot against his own will. And DeMarcus Robinson will be fine. Ricky Pearsall will have a breakout year. And regardless of what happens behind them, maybe Jordan Watkins will provide some. Doesn't really matter. So that's the offense. And then...
And then
the offensive line is fine. The offensive line's totally fine.
Yeah.
It's got some
top
ups
end.
And downs.
Its top end has a chance to be really, really good.
It does. It does. So that's the offense. Defense, Mykal Williams and CJ West make a massive difference on the defensive line. Mm-hmm. Alfred Collins in the second half of the year starts to put it together and is at least a run stopping force. They start to develop as a really good run defense and have some cool packages with Bryce Huff and Mykal Williams and Sam-O and start to do some really cool shit in terms of rushing the passer. Maybe Nick Martin even finds a role as a blitzer and sort of takes on like a Hufanga role where he's like not even a real linebacker.
Yeah, he might be the big nickel that they've always wanted.
He's basically a safety, right?
He's and the they size just say, of a safety. It would make a lot of sense to just play him as a strong safety.
And he's not the will. He's just sort of an extra linebacker, but really he's an extra defensive lineman. He's an extra edge rusher. He's Jamal Adams. That's sort of his role intermittently, and it makes for some fun pass rushing options. Okay. And then Fred Warner remains elite. Yes. Dee Winters somehow stays healthy. Even if he doesn't, I think they can find a way for some competence.
He takes it to another level.
Gifford. Yeah. I think Bethune next to Warner would be fine.
I disagree with that, but that's another conversation.
I think he would be fine. And then at corner, you get lucky with health, and Lenore and Green stay mostly healthy.
Yeah.
And then Mustafa comes back and Marquis Siegel and him are outstanding. Yep. And if that all happens and they stay mostly healthy, they'll win the conference. They will.
Yes, they would. That would be.
Is that likely? No.
No. No. No. I agree with everything that you just said. Shockingly, I would like to point out, Sky Moore is currently the second best healthy receiver on this team, and in fact, the second healthy receiver out of two. CJ West is like guys like CJ West and Upton Stout. This is something that, and I will include myself in this 100%. But I'm going to use the vague media term. This is something that the media, the cabal that gets together every day at practice, and we scheme ways to make your team look bad or to cover up their right. faults in our grand conspiracy that's run by corporate overlords. You should hang out with the media sometimes. Trust me, it ain't that complicated. But we see that CJ West is awesome the first couple days of camp, yep. right? And then we see that Upton Stout looks like the little Energizer Bunny out there. And we just go, oh, well, that's settled.
Right, right.
We do the first impressions thing. And this is unfair to Dominic Pooney, who was really, really good last year. But we did this last year with Pooney, where no one can really get a read on offensive line during preseason. But then week one comes, Pooney has a really good game against the Jets, unquestionably. Continues on, has a couple pretty good games after that. And everyone just says, oh, well, Dominic Pooney's like a Pro Bowl caliber player. And they just don't look that way for the next 10 or so weeks. And it's not all Dom Pooney's fault that he regressed a little bit. And I know there's some injuries involved, but also the book got out on him a little bit. And I do think that he's made the adjustments and he's ready for that because he's a really cerebral player. He's a very physically talented player. I think Dom Pooney has a chance to have a Pro Bowl season. He's really, really good. But these first impressions, both positive and negative, carry all the weight. It's why Brock Purdy is this firebrand still. It's luckily subsided a bit, but I had to, you know, get at my man Chris Broussard today and be like, when he said that Brock Purdy wasn't as bad as everyone thought. Who thought Brock Purdy was bad last year? Like, what kind of rhetoric are we? Brock Purdy was bad. Did you watch Brock Purdy play? Was he perfect?
Most people don't. I have a lot of valid. Friends on the East Coast where I talk to them about him, and they just don't. You do forget, like, I'm going back to the East Coast in a few weeks. There still like is a monumental East Coast bias where people just don't watch the second window games or they don't watch them as closely and anything that's like that late.
They're too drunk, let's be honest.
I lived in New Jersey. I get it. I mean, what else are you going to
do? In November in New Jersey and you're watching the Giants or the Jets, you're toasted by 5 o'clock.
You get home, you eat chili, you watch your team lose in not just like a, it's not even funny. It's like actually just like so inept that you can't even laugh. I mean, I'm talking about the colloquial, like New Jerseyan. I laughed immediately. I learned how to laugh. And if you
and
don't,
you left, you laughed and you
I laughed and left. Live, there laugh, leave.
Live, laugh, left.
Should we get to some comments?
No, but like, again, just my point is that these first impressions carry so much weight. The first impression of Brock Purdy was, oh, he was the last pick. Last picks never do anything.
Right.
He shows up at camp. I'm not going to lie. Like I thought based off his preseason play, and I don't want to do the whole Wikipedia on Brock Purdy here, but like based off his preseason play, I'm like, oh, they should keep him around. He's got a little something. And then he was pretty good against the Dolphins as they tried to blitz him into oblivion in his first game. But like people just consistently are like, well, he can't be good because my impression of him is that he was the last player taken. And that context carries through. I love no one was hammering. Mykel Williams and CJ West were legitimately my two favorite players in the draft. Okay. So shout out to whoever's in the 49ers scouting department and has John's ear watching the show. I'll find you. But, and shout out to all the other scouting departments watching the show. I know who you are.
Yeah. And shout out to whoever found Siegel, too. Awesome.
Outstanding work. I didn't see that coming. But, like, the point is, I think CJ West is awesome. I love everything that he showed at Indiana. The idea that a couple of early practices at training camp against a 49ers offensive line, which is questionable, especially with depth, is now somehow just going to translate into him being a viable every down player for you. is a bit fanciful, right? In the same way that just thinking that you could change everything about Alfred Collins in one training camp was ridiculous and is proven to be ridiculous. And Upton Stout, you watch him for a little bit and you're like, wow, this guy, you want to talk about pop, but we're not watching close enough. We're not watching the practice film to be able to see maybe the stuff that he missed. And the size has already reared its ugly head. And you're just asking for an awful lot to go right for a team that seems to never have things go right for them on the health department.
Right.
In a sport where you have to bake in a certain level of attrition, and maybe the Niners have to bake in more. And again,
here's the reality. Healthy teams win. Like when they were healthy, they went to the Super Bowl. Both years that they were healthy, they went to the Super Bowl in 19 and 23. Like 24. I don't know what year it is.
They played the Super Bowl
in 24, but it was 2023.
Jeez, was that 2024? Yes. Jesus Christ. Not that long ago. Juwan Jennings had a great game there. I'm sure he brings that up in the contract negotiations. Yeah. He should have won Super Bowl MVP, but here we go. They have some incredible high-end talent.
Don't have a lot of proven assets.
Yeah.
Before we get out of here, let's get some comments.
We got a lot of them today. I'm excited.
Let's start with Joseph. I think he was talking about the defensive front. Shout out Joseph.
They drafted not for this year. Now some guys will manifest this year, but last year's draft isn't panning out as well as we thought. Pearsall's great. Grendo's gone. Like, Grendo has no role on this team, as far as I can tell. I guess he's a kick returner and, like, a super weird gadget player who gets 5 or 6 snaps a game at most. That's not...
He's going to have to be, like, incredible in his limited practice reps or something, but... Yeah, they just don't trust him enough. The upside is immense, but it's... Yeah.
Again, so the 2024 draft is Pearsall, Renardo Green, love both of those, and Pooney. And Malik Mustafa. Fantastic. Fantastic stuff. Then it's Grendo, Cowing, Kingston, and hey, Bethune. Look at him. Good on Tatum Bethune. For all the knocks that I've given Nick Martin off of 3 preseason games and a couple practices, Tatum Bethune is testament that you can get better. Because he had a lot of the same concerns. Too small, doesn't see it fast enough. He's gotten a lot better. And he does not have the same kind of pop as Nick Martin. So more power to him. But like just this year's draft, just quickly, Mykel Williams just got back to practice. Alfred Collins, total question mark, boomer bust player. Nick Martin won't be playing until the second half, and that's the best case scenario. Upton Stout, no flipping idea. Just no flipping idea. CJ West just got back to practice. Jordan Watkins, injured. Would have been the starting X receiver by default? I don't know.
Yeah.
Jordan James, injured. Now buried on the depth chart. Marquise Siegel, thank God he's there. Curtis Rourke, redshirt year. Connor Colby, you're now starting. You're supposed to be a project that we may be practice squad, but you're the starter until we can get the clearance to put Pooney on the field.
Pooney will play. Pooney will play.
And Junior Bergen already cut. So
yeah, I mean that one was like
we knew that.
Maybe
we knew that.
Maybe we'll find Devin Hester, but probably not.
No, because you know what happened with Devin Hester? He was fucking awesome at the University of Miami, and I think he went 23rd overall. That is, by the way, good drafts. If you got your first 4 picks out of 8, and you nailed your top 124, 31, 64, 86, and 124, fantastic work. A-plus stuff. I don't know what they have this year, but they have to find out a lot of what they have this year. And like you think about Green and Pooney and Mustafa, they came through last year and they still only won 6 games. Now you have to have those guys come through again, take it to another level. Pearsall has to break out.
I mean, I don't know. Did all those guys have to take it to another level? If they're like, they provide like the same level and you get other pieces around them and they're healthy, you'll probably be fine.
Okay. And they're healthy. We keep saying it. This is one that Woodpit, one of our favorites here. Shout out Woodpit. Maybe they split CMC out there way more. This has been something that's been suggested, like, oh, just use Grendo as a wide receiver, or oh, just use CMC as a wide receiver. Like, the whole point of those guys is that they can be mismatches because you can flex them out of the backfield, which they still might do. But if people know that you're going to use them straight up as a wide receiver, they're not actually that good of wide receivers. They're just awesome because now that you're in a base defense and now you have
he's
a linebacker.
Pretty awesome.
But like, you're not Christian McCaffrey.
He's a better wide receiver than some receivers, but only
some.
Yeah, but like he could play slot receiver and be very good.
I think that the Christian McCaffrey, like, the beauty of Christian McCaffrey is that you can line him up there after line him up in the backfield first.
His issue is he actually doesn't have as much long speed as people might think he has. He's
true. We've seen that.
Short area burst, shiftiness,
yeah,
vision, feel, all that other stuff. So he'd be like an insanely good possession slot receiver in my view.
Okay. I'm going to disagree on that, but the fact of the matter is that it's not really applicable on the basis of Kyle Shanahan's entire offensive ethos is creating mismatches. So what he wants to do is move guys around so that you show one defense, and then guess what? You're in the wrong defense because of the way that we shifted around. That's already what they do with him. So do they have to do that more? Does that mitigate its value? I don't know, but that's probably where they're at. That's exactly right, Henry. Okay, Cowing is the next Lockett.
First of all, I just had this start because I don't care if this is a joke. I actually don't think it was, which is why I started. Don't ever disrespect Tyler Lockett like that. He was the best wide receiver on the Seahawks 2 years ago.
Yeah.
He was Tyler always Lockett's better than DK.
Outstanding.
He was receiver. Always better than DK in my view.
I think and he was referring to former that. Kansas City Chief Kevin Lockett, who has a career.
Or Ricardo Lockett.
Oh, hey now. Now we're talking. Kevin Lockett, career
130
catches.
Player to compare him to because physically Lockett was like huge, as I recall.
Kevin Lockett was 6 foot 186.
Do you expect Janney to play week one?
No, I don't. I can officially change my opinion if he practices in the next 2 days, but I don't expect Juwan.
Yeah,
I don't expect resolution.
Yeah, I think it'll linger, and I think he will end up making a bad choice. I think he will end up regretting the hold in because he will think he has leverage in the 49ers. I think we'll just say we're just gonna die.
The Niners have made it clear that like they're not going to do anything, and they'll let Juwan Jennings figure out how this thing ends.
And I honestly think that's the right approach. Like as much as you need him,
yeah,
he's a really good player. I kind of think you say I don't care. Well, like again, my suggestion was to throw in another incentive or to make the incentives a little bit easier as a compromise. But like that's not, you don't really just give in just because he held out. Like I think you would have to add another incentive and maybe guarantee $500,000 or something small. But like I don't know.
I wouldn't engage with them. I think it's giving into a tantrum. And one of the other things that they've done this offseason is they've tried to reestablish dominance, right, in contract negotiations after the Ayuk thing.
Yep.
You can't immediately bend over to a temper tantrum.
Yeah. To me, it doesn't feel like 2017 because they were horrendous roster. The starters are way, 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 way better.
Totally.
It's closer to 2019 to me. No, not 2019, but like the top part of the roster is a little bit like 2019, but then it's a lot like 2018 where you're still adding like a lot of rookies and you don't know. I don't know that they've had a roster like this actually ever in the Shanahan era. I think
it's never been this
unique.
Extreme.
And I think we want a frame of reference, but it's pretty unique.
No, it's the Rams. It's what the Rams have been doing the last couple of years.
When do you think Mustafa comes back? I think quite literally he will come back the second that I think it's he has to miss the first four games. I think he'll be back week five.
I don't think so. That's a short week. I'm going to bet week six.
It is a short week?
Yes. Week five is the Thursday.
Is that the Thursday?
Yeah.
Yeah, but remember they did that last year and we were like, oh, that won't happen. And then they did it anyway. I forget who it was.
I don't know if we should hold up last year as a testament to how to effectively handle injuries.
Then week six.
I would say week six, October 12th, and that's, again, best case scenario.
Expectations of the team going into the regular season. We kind of already talked about it. I guess he wants a record. Yep. What would you say the record's going to be?
9-8. I think they have the talent to win 13, and I think that's not how it works.
I feel like I've said 9-8 the entire time. I'm going to get fun and say 10-7.
Okay. It's under either way. And by the way, what do you think 9-8 gets them? What do you think 10-7 gets them?
10-7 gets them a wild card. 9-8 maybe gets them the last wild card.
Seahawks won 10 games last year, didn't make the playoffs. I think it comes down to week 18. I think they have a chance to make the playoffs in week 18 at home, Seattle. And I'll leave it at that.
I would prefer for them if it was on the road. let's see. Last few. More concerned with CB, safety room, or D-line?
Very different concerns.
Very different concerns.
Like, the defensive line, if we're playing the Jay Hutchinson everything works out great game, has a chance to be spectacular. Like, a legitimately elite unit. Mykel Williams holds a lot of cards in his hand, or I guess in his ankle. Like, yeah. There's a lot of ways that things can go awesome. Because C.J. West is great, and they figure it out with Collins, let's call it second half of the year to be conservative. Like, Williams is that guy. Huff is someone who is a positive for this team, unquestionably. They have some other dudes they can rotate in who are at least NFL-caliber defensive tackles. Bosa has a chance to go absolutely thermonuclear because he has some help opposite side, which he didn't have last year. Like, Sam Ekwonu's a guy who went from, thank God he's here, he's your number two defensive end, to, like, you could have cut him today, and yep, it wouldn't have been something that got a headline. But I'm more concerned about that because it feels like there's more moving parts there, whereas with, I like the safety situation, which will just magically get better, thanks to Siegel. And then the CB situation, it's like, you're great.
I would say, because your concern kind of has to be the starters, right? You have to sort of assume it's going to be mostly healthy. I'd be more concerned about defensive tackle than most other places, even being optimistic, sort of. The depth at CB probably concerns me as much as anywhere on the roster, because I don't think they have an actual second. I don't think they have a backup outside corner that's viable.
The other thing, just real fast, that we haven't really gotten into is they're going to have a defensive line that has some serious questions against the run until proven otherwise, right? And their linebacker situation hasn't appreciably improved other than Fred getting healthy, at least to my eyes. Like, your total question marks with Gifford and Winters and certainly Martin. So you have that. And now you're going to put Upton Stout in the box on every play as some sort of, like, yep. This is why Lenore was so valuable, because he could play as a quasi-linebacker, and I'm just very interested to see how they manage that. They keep getting smaller, and it's like, man, I don't know. Maybe I would sacrifice some of that speed to get bigger, because you guys got pushed around last year.
I get that. Milo, kind of the point we were making, both Homer and Doomer takes are valid.
Yeah.
It could go. There's a wide range of outcomes.
Boomer bust, stars and scrubs, baby.
Last one from JW. Can we talk about the big wedding now?
Jake, I'm gonna be like deeply earnest here. They're so goddamn cute. Good for them.
They're cute. They are cute. I don't.
Mazel tov. I don't have nothing but blessings.
I cringe when the Chiefs team account goes permanently a member of the Chiefs family. Right, Taylor? I'm like, chill out.
Every NFL social media team is super cringy, but like teams, and by the way, the Niners do this with like the faithful teams that are like, we have like an overarching Dub Nation and the Kingdom. Anyone that has this like name, like the Sickos, anyone that has this name for
anyone
a group
that's
of fans,
that deranged,
it and to like tweet about that, it's like, ew, Bills Mafia. It's very cringy to me. I thought it was fake. I'm not going to lie. When it first happened, I thought it was fake. And
yeah, but you know how I knew how I knew it wasn't? Because they started putting out the thing of Travis might be entering his last year. And it's like, we need to preserve your brain. So you get one more year, and then you gotta be there to, you can coach our kids' football team.
Yeah.
We can have, whole squad.
Travis Kelce, my daughter, my 2-year-old daughter, watches Winnie the Pooh now. She's a big fan of Winnie the Pooh. And
aren't we all?
Yes. Winnie the Pooh is legitimately hilarious. And he at one point goes, oh, I'm a bear of very little brain. And I've been just saying that, like, oh, a very little brain. Travis Kelce, like, a little bit of Winnie the Pooh energy every now and again.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why Taylor needs to protect it.
I think he is, like, sneaky smarter than he gets credit for.
He's clever.
But he does, he's got the himbo thing going, so you'll never really know exactly what's going on there.
Smart enough to hold her down. She's really smart.
Point is, you know, good for them.
I drove down to Levi Stadium the other day for practice, and I'm like, you know what I don't listen to? Taylor Swift. And I listened, and you know what?
Yeah.
I get it.
Shout out, Mateus. Hey, last thing before we get out here, again, we are putting together a preseason guide.
That's Jake's hint to tell me to finish writing what I need to write.
That's right. Dieter has some homework assignments that he needs to finish.
I'm doing it right after this.
Great. And then we're working on a Nick Martin.
Yes.
Working on a Nick Martin for members only. It will be film. And you will get access to the spreadsheet.
Yes.
Of my literally breaking down each play, which is deranged. But that's our shtick.
This is what the people have asked for. They've asked me to apologize, and I've thrown Jake on it, and I've said, talk to these people, and we will.
That's right. All right, folks.
Bye.
See ya.